Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading this week's local articles from the San Angelo Standard Times. These are from the week of Sunday, March 7th, 2021. I'm reading articles on Thursday, March 11th, and I'll begin with the most recent articles first. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo. Tom Green County, as of March 10th, from the city of San Angelo, 16,444 positive cases reported, 9 new positive cases, deaths 303, 196 from Tom Green County and 107 from other counties, 8 currently hospitalized, 182 active cases. Here's how many people have received a COVID-19 vaccine in Tom Green County in the past week by Chastity Lasky, USA Network. Tom Green County has administered more than 35,424 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of March 9th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up 20.35% from the previous week's tally of 29,433 COVID-19 doses administered. As of March 9th, 11.92% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention considers someone fully vaccinated 2 weeks after they've been given a single-dose shot of Johnson & Johnson or a second shot of either Pfizer or Moderna. Governor Greg Abbott's executive order to lift the state's requirement for facial coverings in public places will go into effect Wednesday, March 10th. San Angelo mask burning event marks governor's decision to reopen Texas by Colin Murphy, published March 11th. To celebrate Governor Greg Abbott's decision to end the mask mandate and open businesses back to full occupancy, the San Angelo Republican Women's Organization hosted a mask burning event at the VFW on Wednesday, March 10th. Along with food, entertainment, and live music, the event featured a ceremonial mask burning in a barrel just outside the entrance to the VFW, 125 South Browning Street. Masks were collected at the door, though only a few were actually set on fire due to restrictions from the San Angelo Fire Department. San Angelo Republican Women President Kelly Duncan said the event was a way to celebrate the day masks are no longer required, despite criticism of Abbott's move from healthcare experts, including Dr. Anthony Fauci, chief medical advisor to President Biden. We wanted to celebrate this for all businesses and for individuals to exercise their freedom to not wear a mask, Duncan said. He, Abbott, also left it up to each business and individual to wear a mask. We think that's great. Everybody can make their own choice and act responsibly. We are all Texans and San Angeloans, and we want everybody to be able to be in business and be open. In response to critics who might say it's too soon to lift restrictions and open businesses to full occupancy, Duncan said it was time to allow owners to make the decision for themselves. People are entitled to their opinion, Duncan said. I will continue to wear a mask in certain settings. I feel it's my personal responsibility to protect my own health. I am so pleased that our governor allowed businesses to make their own decisions about a mask requirement. It is up to each business owner to protect their business by staying open and by protecting their customers. As a restaurant owner, I am all for wearing a mask. My staff is going to keep wearing them because that is the safe thing to do. Railway Museum of San Angelo earns award from Texas Historical Commission by Monica Ramos, San Angelo Railway Museum. Published March 11th. A true shining light in the face of adversity, the Railway Museum of San Angelo has been recognized by the Texas Historical Commission. The commission holds annual awards to exemplify worthy accomplishments and leadership in the preservation of Texas heritage. On February 21st, 2021, our local historic museum received an award of merit for significant contributions to historical preservation, education, and community outreach. The director of the History Programs Division of the Texas Historical Commission wrote, "We were impressed by the museum's successful efforts in engaging and educating the community, as well as by its quick pivot toward online programming during the pandemic." When the pandemic began, many businesses and organizations were forced to close. the Railway Museum saw an opportunity to help during the COVID-19 shutdown. The president of the Railway Museum of San Angelo, Susanna Valenzuela, created weekly virtual outreach programs such as Tunes on the Track, Rail Tales, and Art Aboard to engage, educate, and entertain the community. In 2019, board members of the Railway Museum began their mission to make the museum an active space for the community and a place for people to visit from around the world to learn about our railroad heritage. As members of the San Angelo Chamber of Commerce and Downtown San Angelo Incorporated and partners of Goodfellow Air Force Base, the museum has been a part of many community-based activities. Activities with the chamber have included participating in the Be a Tourists in Your Own Town Tour, Business at Happy Hour, Goodfellow Air Force Base Newcomer Tour, and Goodfellow Appreciation Day. Downtown San Angelo activities include being a part of the National American Express Shop Small Campaign, the Downtown Stroll, and playing a part in the hashtag Downtown Strong and hashtag Heart of the City campaign. The Railway Museum has hosted outreach events for the Hispanic community by introducing a Hispanic Heritage event that was free to the public with mariachi music and folkloric dancers, and holding a Covers for Kids face mask distribution in partnership with the San Angelo Hispanic Heritage Museum and Cultural Center. Currently, the museum offers living history tours under the direction of board member Dr. Linda Bond. Visitors can experience guided tours of the museum by various groups dressed in 1800s attire. Great Creek High School theater students and Angelo State University Association of Mexican American Students have conducted the living history tours, which add an entertaining touch to sharing our past. The board members of the Railway Museum of San Angelo are continuously and actively striving to keep this beautiful treasure alive. With operating expenses exceeding the small portions of monthly income from admissions and gift shop sales, any public contributions will help save the museum and its integrity, states Monica Ramos, vice president of the Railway Museum. The museum will begin a 6-week membership drive on March 13th, including living history tours and scavenger hunts from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. every Saturday. The drive will conclude with a Railway Days Festival on May 15th. Online donations to the museum can be made by visiting sanangelorailway.org. Man charged in 1986 San Angelo cold case murder requests new attorney, by Elena Edgen, published March 10th. A Dallas area man requested a new defense attorney Wednesday after he had been in prison since his March 2019 arrest in the San Angelo cold case murder of Dovey Dykes. About 9 a.m. Wednesday, March 10th, 2021, Adolph Gonzalez attended a hearing through Zoom in the 51st District Court. Gonzalez, 63, has been in the Tom Green County Jail since March 11th, 2019. The hearing was originally scheduled as a bond reduction hearing, but the court heard a motion to withdraw Gonzalo Rios, Gonzalez's attorney, from the case. Gonzalez told Dusek he had not seen one bit of discovery since Rios took the case in January 2020. This was partially due to attorneys having trouble meeting with clients in jail, as the electronic system is not effective, Dusek says. Gonzalez also said Rios did not file motions he requested and wanted Gonzalez to meet with the district attorney about a plea offer. Rios rebutted the plea issue, which 51st District Attorney Allison Palmer commented on. I can confirm the state did extend an offer to resolve the case, and Rios did not extend one, Palmer said. Dusek explained that the state makes an offer in every case, and the defense attorneys have an ethical obligation to make the defendant aware of the offer. That does not mean the attorney wants you to take it, Dusek said. Do not take offense. He would be functioning only with that if you authorized. Dusek denied the motion to withdraw Rios from the case. I know you are frustrated, Dusek said to Gonzalez. I can't think of anyone better to appoint to your case. I'm confident Rios is doing his job. Plans were made for Rios to meet with Gonzalez at the Tom Green County Detention Center to review the case. Dusek also scheduled a pretrial hearing for April. Arrest made in Dovey Dykes' cold case 32 years later. On July 11, 1986, Belle Guess entered her aunt's home in the 1000 block of Culberson. Dykes, found dead on the living room floor, had bruises and cuts along her neck, face, and shoulders. An investigation showed she died of cardiac arrhythmia as a result of sexual assault. Nearly three decades later, in March 2015, San Angelo Police Detective Jim Coleman attempted to have a DNA sample tested. Crime lab officials with the Department of Public Safety originally deemed that the sample was not sufficient for submission into the Combined DNA Index System, CODIS. However, they were able to test it, and 3 months later, the FBI searched the offender's database and found a match for Gonzalez. San Angelo police were told of the case of the match in November 2017. Lab tests haven't found benzene in Northeast San Angelo in weeks. Water advisory remains, by John Tufts, published March 11th. More than a month after officials discovered high levels of contaminants dripping from faucets in San Angelo's Paul Ann neighborhood, it's still too dangerous in some parts of the city to drink, cook, or consume the water. Portions of San Angelo's northern industrial zone, as of Wednesday, remain under a water advisory, despite recent lab tests, which revealed officials have found no detectable levels of 10 possible contaminants in water samples collected in the area. Among those contaminants, more than a dozen water samples taken in San Angelo's northern industrial zone have found no detectable levels of naphthalene, benzene, or acetone since February 19th. A spokesperson for the city, however, said the water advisory will last for the foreseeable future until investigators can discover what caused the source of the contamination. Currently, the area remains valved off from the rest of the water system, said Brian Groves, public information officer for the city of San Angelo. It will be some time before those valves are opened and the northern industrial area is released from the current do not drink advisory. Groves said officials were being cautious and wanted to ensure any deficiencies found during the investigation process are fixed and addressed before the city returns to normal operations. He said the Paul Ann and northern industrial areas of San Angelo will continue to be tested weekly to make sure no contaminants are found in the water. Earlier last month, dozens of residents living in the Paul Ann neighborhood complained their water smelled like burnt plastic, which triggered a citywide do not use advisory on February 8th. The advisory led to school closures, event cancellations, and businesses, which were still reeling from lost revenue due to COVID-19, once again closing their doors. Investigators later found high levels of chemical contaminants that included benzene and naphthalene, both listed as human carcinogens, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. While water restrictions have since been eased for most of the city, portions of San Angelo's northern industrial areas remain under an advisory. On Wednesday, March 10th, the city issued its latest water test samples, collected around San Angelo from February 8th through March 1st. Lab tests as early as February 19th have found no detectable levels of benzene, acetone, or naphthalene in San Angelo, which include the Paul Ann and northern industrial areas. We are turning over every stone to find the source of contamination, said Water Utilities Director Allison Strube during a recent city council meeting. Strube noted the contamination did not occur in a lake or river, but from a water customer somewhere in the industrial area. On March 2nd, she announced more inspectors had arrived in San Angelo to assist with investigations. Everett named new general sales manager at Foster Communications in San Angelo, from staff reports, published March 11th. Longtime radio broadcast professional Steve Everett has returned to West Texas as the new general sales manager of Foster Communications. Everett, a native of Ballinger, began his career in radio at the age of 14. He spent 20 years as the general manager of a group of stations operated by HEH Communications in Huntsville. From 1982 to 1998, he was president of SEC-CESS Broadcasting Incorporated in Brady and owned and operated six stations. He has also worked for Graham Brothers Communications, LLC in San Angelo. Everett's wife, Dee, is retired from the Huntsville-Walker County Chamber of Commerce and is now active in radio sales as well. She will be joining Foster Communications after they complete their move to San Angelo. Affidavit states San Angelo man smuggled undocumented immigrant for money, by Elena Edgen, published March 10th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a traffic stop led to the discovery of a man being smuggled in Tom Green County, according to an arrest affidavit. About 5:15 p.m. February 27th, a trooper with the Texas Department of Public Safety conducted a traffic stop on Loop 306 near mile marker 384. The trooper stopped a white Dodge pickup with an Arizona temporary tag, which was speeding, according to the affidavit. The driver, identified by a Wyoming driver's license, told the trooper he was transporting an undocumented immigrant for payment. The trooper also found 4.3 grams of methamphetamine in the Dodge, according to the release. Timothy Glenn Collins, 40, was arrested February 27th on suspicion of possession of methamphetamine and smuggling of a person. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $30,000 bond as of 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. San Angelo Rodeo Parade route changes due to street repairs. Here's where you need to go, by Rosanna Frere, published March 9th. The annual San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo Parade has set its date for 2021 with some route modifications. The San Angelo Rodeo Parade is held the first Saturday of the Stock Show and Rodeo as a way to officially kick off the event. This year, the parade will begin at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 10th. Regardless of whether the parade will go on, with the exception of lightning, according to the rodeo's website. This parade is one of the largest held annually in San Angelo and is always a favorite of spectators, the website states. The parade is held in historic downtown San Angelo and features riding clubs, trail ride participants, antique tractors, wagons, marching bands, and floats. Due to ongoing construction downtown, the parade route has been changed. However, all staging will remain the same as indicated in the lineup instructions included in the entry form. The parade route will begin at Irving and Concho Streets, proceed east to Oaks Street, turn left on Oaks to Harris Avenue, turn left on Harris, proceed to Chadburn Street, turn right on Chadburn and proceed to College Street, turn left on College, continue to Irving, turn left on Irving to Beauregard Avenue, turn right on Beauregard and proceed to Randolph Street. Turn left on Randolph and proceed to River Drive, where it will end. The parade entry deadline is March 26, 2021. There is no cost to participate in the rodeo parade. Only an entry form is required. For more information, call 325-653-7785 or email Brenda@sanangelorodeo.com. Ticket sales date. Mutton Bustin' Info announced for San Angelo Rodeo, by Rosanna Fair, published March 8th. The ticket sales date, performance schedule, and information for Mutton Bustin' registration have been announced for the 2021 San Angelo Rodeo. The rodeo will be held at 100% capacity with an additional $100,000 in prize money added. Here's what we know about prices, the performance schedule, and more. The rodeo and carnival will take place April 9th through the 24th. Rodeo tickets will go on sale Monday, March 15th at 10 a.m. online and at the Foster Communications Coliseum box office. Tickets can be found online at sanangelorodeo.com. Performance schedule. Friday, April 9th, 7:30 p.m. $15.50. Saturday, April 10th, 1 p.m. $12.50. Saturday, April 10th, 7:30 p.m. $20.50. Sunday, April 11th, 2 p.m. $12.50, which goes to Children's Miracle Network. Thursday, April 15th, 7:30 p.m. $10.50. Friday, April 16th, 7:30 p.m., $15.50. Saturday, April 17th, 1 p.m., $12.50. Saturday, April 17th, 7:30 p.m., $20.50. Sunday, April 18th, 2 p.m., $15.50, Extreme Bulls. Wednesday, April 21st, 7:30 p.m., $10.50, Military Appreciation Night. Thursday, April 22nd, 7:30 p.m., $10.50, Tough Enough to Wear Pink. Friday, April 23rd, 7:30 p.m., $25.50, PRCA Finals. Saturday, April 24th, 7:30 p.m., $30.50, Cinch Shoot Out All-Star Performance. Gate Admission. Daily admission prices, adults $8, children ages 11 and under $5, children under 2 are free. Carnival prices to be determined. Mutton Bustin' Registration. This year, the Sonora Bank Mutton Bustin' Registration will take place online. To participate in the Coliseum Rodeo performances, a parent can register their child online Wednesday, March 10th, beginning at 10 a.m. at sanangelorodeo.com. Sign up will be on a first-come, first-served basis and close as soon as all posted slots are filled. There's a $25 entry fee for per contestant due at sign-up, which is non-refundable. Participation is limited to boys and girls weighing less than 50 pounds that are a minimum of 4 years of age at the time of competition. Single vehicle crash in Tom Green County leaves man dead, two injured. By Elena Edgen, published March 8th. A Florida man died Sunday after a single vehicle crash in Tom Green County, according to a news release from the Department of Public Safety. About 4:29 p.m. Sunday, March 7th, officials responded to a single vehicle crash on Susan Peak Road. A 2020 Hyundai Elantra was traveling at an unsafe speed and lost control. The car hit a tree and overturned, according to the release. Ryan Alexander Tasso, 25, of Riverview, Florida, died in the crash. He was wearing a seatbelt, according to the release. The driver, 19, and another passenger, 22, were transported to Shannon Medical Center. The passenger had incapacitating injuries, and the driver had non-incapacitating injuries, according to the release. No Limit Monster Trucks coming to San Angelo. Tickets on sale now. By Rosanna Frere. Published March 8th. No Limits Monster Trucks is coming to San Angelo with Kids Power Wheel Races, the opportunity to ride in a monster truck, and more. According to a news release, some of the nation's most competitive monster trucks are coming to Foster Communications Coliseum at 7 p.m. Saturday, March 13th. The 2 to 3 hour event will be operated under the governor's and CDC guidelines. Discount tickets are on sale through StubWire.com and Blair's Western Wear, 4230 Sherwood Way. Get tickets now to see these incredible 10,000-pound car-crushing giants compete in racing and wheelie events, the release states. The Coliseum may never be the same after these bad boys turn it loose with amazing freestyle action. The list of trucks include the legendary and former world champion Barefoot, plus Monster Patrol, Zilla, Texas Outlaw, and Skyotic. Amateur and pro motorcycle racers will compete in a variety of competition classes. There will be classes with kids from 4 years old and up. Classes are per rider skill set and motorcycle size. The Night of Destruction and Thrill Show will feature X Games freestyle motocross jumpers. Cowboy Kenny Bartram will be throwing down some crazy tricks he is famous for, the release stated. Full complete rotation backflip on his motorcycle is a life-threatening stunt, and Kenny has the scars to show for it. Freestyle rider Flying Ryan Mayung will also show his tricks. There will be a free pit party for VIP box seat ticket holders, as well as an opportunity to see the trucks up close and take pictures. Kids and adults can also ride on board a real monster truck during the pit party and intermission. Ride truck operators charge a fee for each person to ride. Kids 3 to 9 years can also race their own battery-operated racers, though reservations must be made. For more information, visit NoLimitsMonsterTrucks.com or call 940-683-4742. flooded San Angelo apartment complex assisting low-income seniors. Housing still needed. By John Tufts, published March 5th. The property owner of a San Angelo apartment complex says he and his team are doing everything they can to find homes for dozens of low-income senior residents who were displaced after their building flooded. On Thursday, March 4th, officials with Plaza del Sol 1, 4375 Oak Grove Boulevard, said the pipe to a fire sprinkler in the attic froze during the winter storm Uri, then burst, flooding all three floors of the building. More than 40 residents were forced to find a new place to shelter. Brad Prack, owner of the Prack Property Management, said while some residents have taken refuge in the units of a second apartment building at Plaza del Sol 2, up to 16 residents were still sleeping on cots in the Plaza del Sol 2 community day room as of Thursday. Park said he and other officials are searching for landlords with available units to house elderly residents for up to 6 months as crews work to repair the damage. "We are working to have everyone housed as soon as possible," Prack stated in an email to the Standard Times. "We are focused on those with special needs or disabilities and in the community room shelter as our first priority, but everyone needs housing." The Plaza del Sol property operates under a HUD 202 program, which is subsidized housing for low-income seniors. Officials at the complex said they've had a huge outpouring from other landlords in the San Angelo area, but say they could still use more help. Prack stated for those landlords who are interested in providing housing, HUD funding could cover up to $762 per month in rent. What's being done to help elderly residents affected by the storm? In addition to finding housing for seniors displaced by the storm, Plaza del Sol will safely store many of their possessions at no additional cost to the residents. Shipping containers could be seen outside the apartment complex Thursday, which a Plaza del Sol apartment complex manager and Prack said were for storing salvageable belongings that weren't ruined by water damage. Those few who have renter's insurance may have access to those resources, but for most of our residents, we are working to have them file a claim with FEMA, which is itself swamped due to the statewide nature of the winter storm's impact, Prack stated. Heavy work trailers hummed Thursday, and crews could be seen entering and exiting the Plaza del Sol 1 building as repairs were underway. Officials at Plaza del Sol said many local organizations have assisted helping senior residents register with FEMA, have provided meal cards, and assisted with utilities. The local housing authority, other apartment complexes, and private landlords have been quick to offer available units, Prack stated. "We also appreciate a number of local churches and meals services, as well as private citizens who have provided funds and resources to assist our residents." Prack hopes residents still sheltering in the common area on donated cots will all have new housing by the end of March. Despite a notice placed on Plaza del Sol 1 advising residents they had to vacate the building in less than 10 days, Prack stated he and his team are working hard to find everyone housing. "We are aggressively seeking alternative housing options for our residents to utilize," Prack stated, noting that most of the residents have found housing, but there are still a few residents left in the community room. "Anyone who has a rental unit that would be interested in offering it available for a short-term rental can contact my office," Prack stated. How you can help. Officials at Plaza del Sol are looking for volunteers to help move items from residents' apartments to storage containers near the building. Those who would like to help volunteer moving the items or landlords with available units to rent can call Prack Property Management Incorporated at 830-372-2600 or via email at bdprak@prakproperty.com. Ballinger teacher placed on leave after accusation of inappropriate behavior. From Staff Reports, published March 8th. A fifth grade teacher at Ballinger Elementary School was placed on administrative leave Thursday, March 4th, due to an allegation of inappropriate behavior with a 12-year-old student, Ballinger ISD Superintendent Jeff Butts confirmed. The news was first reported by Abilene TV station KTXS. Ballinger Police Chief Ray Cornett said his department is conducting an investigation to determine if charges will be filed. Butts released a statement on Saturday, March 6th. On Thursday, March 4th, 2021, Ballinger ISD School Administration was informed of a possible issue related to inappropriate behavior of a teacher toward a student. On Thursday, the Ballinger Police Department was notified of the accusation, and the teacher was placed on administrative leave pending the investigation. Due to this matter being under investigation, no further details or comments will be made at this time. As always, Ballinger ISD puts the safety and well-being of our students as a top priority. San Angelo ISD will continue masks and health protocols through May 2021. By Elena Edgen and John Tufts, published March 5th. San Angelo ISD announced Friday afternoon that masks and other health protocols against COVID-19 will remain in place through the school year, according to a district news release. After careful and thoughtful consideration of recent guidance from the Texas Education Agency, TEA, and the Centers for Disease Control, CDC, as well as local health officials and community partners, SAISD will maintain all current health and safety protocols through the last 9 weeks of the school year, the release stated. Officials said this includes the mask requirement for fourth grade students and up, with masks being highly recommended for students third grade and younger. The district's announcement Friday, March 5th, to continue safety protocols through May 2021 in limiting the spread of the virus came in the wake of Governor Greg Abbott's recent decision to ease COVID restrictions across Texas. Abbott issued an executive order Tuesday, which will take effect March 10th, and rescind most of his earlier orders, including restrictions on business occupancy and statewide mask order from July. Reaction to Abbott's decision has been mixed, drawing almost immediate criticism from the medical community, as well as praise from elected officials. Stating the health and safety of its students and staff remains its guiding priority, officials with San Angelo Independent School District thanked students, families, staff, and the community for its ongoing partnership in keeping our schools safe throughout the school year. We remain committed to provide a relevant and inspiring education for our students in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, the release stated. As part of the district's safety protocols, athletics will also continue the use of masks for activities and athletic venues. District officials stated they would review athletic event venue capacities for possible increases and ask people to continue following social distancing guidelines at all SAISD facilities and events. SAISD will continue to evaluate our health and safety protocols weekly for possible modifications as we move forward. As employees and families receive the vaccine, we will monitor virus transmission rates in our schools, classrooms, and the San Angelo community to guide future decisions, the release stated. San Angelo Burlington announces opening date, now hiring, by Rosanna Frere, published March 5th. Burlington has announced its opening date in San Angelo and will offer a gift card to the first 100 customers. The store will open Friday, March 19th, 2021 at 4238 Sunset Drive. Store hours are Monday through Sunday from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Following the ribbon-cutting ceremony, the first 100 customers 18 years or older will receive a $5 Burlington gift card, no purchase necessary. On Saturday, March 20th, customers will receive a free Burlington umbrella while supplies last, no purchase necessary. Burlington's new location features a design that creates a clean and simple shopping experience for customers, making it easy to navigate and find fantastic merchandise at amazing prices, according to a news release. The store will sell a wide selection of items, including ladies' apparel and accessories, menswear, children's clothing, footwear, baby items, home decor, gifts, pet needs, and essential items. This store will bring the total number of locations in the state to 86. We are thrilled to open a new Burlington in San Angelo, providing employment opportunities and offering the community great values on brand name merchandise for the entire family and home, said Michael O'Sullivan, CEO, Burlington Stores. Whether they're looking for brand-name clothing, stylish home decor items, baby products, or everyday essentials, customers will discover fantastic bargains on new merchandise arriving regularly. The store is still hiring. Interested candidates can learn more about joining the team at www.burlingtonstores.jobs. Have an improvement suggestion for San Angelo? Here's how you can be heard. By Elena Edgen, published March 5th. The City of San Angelo has released an online survey to get the public's thoughts on what needs to be improved for the next few years, according to a city news release. City staff is preparing the 2021-26 Capital Improvement Plan, which will help the city prioritize the area's large capital needs. This includes streets, water, drainage, and park projects. Residents can suggest projects at bit.ly/38EPCWK. Projects should have a useful life of at least 3 years, cost more than $25,000, and require 6 months or more to complete, according to the release. The City Council has begun taking steps to improve street and water infrastructure, which are two of the issues they have identified as a top priority, the release stated. Once approved by City Council, this plan will shape the 2022 fiscal year budget, which will begin October 1, 2021. Funding for these projects will come from grants, designated funds, bond issuance, unspent money from prior budgets, and sales taxes, according to the release. Two San Angelo inmates assault man who required emergency surgery to remove spleen. By Elena Edgen, published March 5th. Two San Angelo men have been indicted after a fellow inmate was left with facial fractures and an injury to his spleen, according to indictments released Monday. On December 9th, 2020, three men were in the Tom Green County Detention Center's housing unit M7, a housing area for inmates. Two suspects began assaulting a third man by striking, kicking, and stomping the man, according to court documents. The assault left the man with multiple facial fractures and an injury to his spleen, which required emergency surgery to have it removed, according to the arrest affidavit. Dimitri Alize Hernandez, 19, has been in Tom Green County Detention Center since April 8, 2020, when he was arrested on a warrant for evading arrest detention with a vehicle. Jonathan Andrew Tucker, 18, has been in the Tom Green County Detention Center since August 28. Indictments charge him with aggravated robbery, aggravated assault causing serious bodily injury, burglary of a habitation, unauthorized use of a vehicle, and two misdemeanors. Part of his charges stem from an April 2020 arrest where he live-streamed police arriving prior to his arrest on suspicion of 8 counts of stolen firearms. Tucker found himself in jail again months later in August when police arrested 4 people in a slew of criminal activity on Colorado Avenue. Tom Green County Sheriff explains jail protocol. Nick Hanna, sworn in as Tom Green County Sheriff in January, explained what happens in situations where fights break out between inmates. During a fight between inmates, we respond to the altercation and use the amount of force necessary to separate the individuals, Hanna said. Our jail has a SWAT team, which can be assembled if needed. We evaluate the need for medical attention and treat accordingly. After the fight, inmates are separated from each other throughout their stay. Consequences for fighting include internal disciplinary action, loss of privileges, and criminal charges being filed in certain circumstances, Hanna said. Physical altercations happen infrequently, but they are a fact of life in any jail environment, he said. There has not been an increase in recent years in our facility. As this case is under investigation and moving through the court system, Tom Green County Detention Center officials could not comment on this specific case. Pathways to Progress. People of Color in Tom Green County Hit Harder by COVID-19. By Kenneth L. Stewart, special to the San Angelo Standard-Times, published March 4th. Tom Luce is well known in Texas business circles for his achievements in corporate law. Alongside his all-star legal business, however, Luce has invested the necessary time and money to build an important center in public service. Recently, he founded a nonprofit public policy think tank called Texas 2036. The mission is to enable Texans to make public policy decisions through accessible data, long-term planning, and statewide engagement. Texas 2036 rolled out two significant products during its first year. The first creation was a strategic plan with 36 goals designed to make the state the best it can be by its bicentennial year. The second was a COVID-19 data dashboard set up to help state and local leaders make good decisions in assessing the impacts of the pandemic as they struggle to reopen the essential institutions of Texas communities. Following that lead, I decided to supplement local knowledge about the key health risks that affected people in different geographical parts of San Angelo and Tom Green County long before COVID-19's pandemic hit. Race, ethnicity, and inequality in the local community. The Census Bureau's most recent measure of household income inequality in Tom Green County produced a GINI coefficient of 0.4556 in 2019. The GINI coefficient provides a standard measure of inequality in any designated geographical area on a ratio scale ranging from 0 to 1. The higher the ratio, the more inequality there is between household incomes. A practical way to grasp the meaning of the GINI coefficient is to compare median household income levels across local neighborhoods known to be low or high income areas. In Tom Green County, such neighborhoods also differ in terms of the percentages of people of color in the neighborhood's populations. For instance, non-Latino white people have comprised the majority of people in 12 Tom Green County census tracts for many years. These include ASU and College Hills, the Bluffs, the Bottom School Area, the Country Clubs and Lake Nasworthy, Grape Creek, the rural areas outside of San Angelo, the Riverside section in North San Angelo, Santa Rita, Southland, Sunset, and the Vista del Arroyo area. In contrast, people of color, including blacks, Latinos, Asians, and other non-whites, have been the majority in 8 residential census tracts over the years. These include the Angelo Heights and Kirby Park area, the Bel Air, Blackshear, and downtown parts of San Angelo, the neighborhood around Fort Concho, the Lakeview and Reagan sections on the north side, Rio Vista on the south side, and the San Jacinto school area on the east side of the city. Over the 5 years between 2015 and 2019, the Census Bureau reports that median household income in the majority white sections of the county averaged $61,676. The related average for people of color neighborhoods was $38,417. Underlying the local GINI indicator is a reality that leaves too many families and households in the people of color sections behind. But the inequality does not stop there. It reaches beyond into matters of health and illness. Pre-pandemic health risk disparities. The PLACES Project is a research venture conducted by the CDC and with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. In 2020, just before the COVID virus began to spread, PLACES released a set of local census tract estimates on health insurance coverage and access to 7 preventative services for various groups who shared a defined risk, such as cancer or heart disease. PLACES also estimated the prevalence of 5 different unhealthy behaviors and 10 serious health outcomes across the local neighborhoods. By grouping the PLACES tract estimates, I developed a summary of pre-pandemic health risk indicators for the majority white and the people of color areas of the local community, as depicted in the accompanying chart. The results reveal a number of key health risk disparities. The findings about unhealthy behaviors may surprise some people who tend to associate bad behavior with low income and poverty. For instance, PLACES data indicate that binge drinking was more prevalent in the majority white sections of the community, while smoking was higher in people of color areas. In addition, obesity and sleep deprivation were more prevalent issues than drinking or smoking in all parts of the community. Overall, the PLACES project indicated that the average prevalence of binge drinking, smoking, sedentary behavior, obesity, and sleep deprivation was 23.4% in white neighborhoods and 28.6% in people of color parts of the community. There was a larger divergence in health insurance coverage between the two areas before the pandemic hit. Places estimated that 18.8% of working-aged adults ages 18 to 64 living in majority white areas of the community lacked health insurance. The parallel number for people of color neighborhoods leaped to 34.8%. Moreover, the difference in coverage echoed through the delivery of prevention services and the onset of underlying chronic health outcomes across the community. The Places Project assessed 7 important prevention services delivered to people living in local census tracts. More than 70% of people in both white and people of color neighborhoods received appropriate services, such as an annual doctor's visit, needed blood pressure medications, and screenings for cholesterol, breast cancer, and cervical cancer. Lower proportions received colon screening and dental checkups. Overall, the Places data indicated that on average, 73.1% of the targeted people at risk in majority white census tracts received the related prevention services. A lower average of 63.9% of people in color neighborhoods received them. The Places Project also estimated the pre-pandemic prevalence of 10 serious chronic medical conditions in local census tracts. Arthritis, adult asthma, cancer, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, coronary heart disease, COPD, diabetes, chronic kidney disease, and stroke were included. The results revealed a shocking disparity. Compared to all local census tracts, the majority white areas had a higher average prevalence on only one chronic condition, cancer. People of color neighborhoods had higher than average morbidity on each of the other 9 conditions. Pandemic impacts. More than a year will likely pass before comprehensive data to compare against the Places Project becomes available. Until then, it is not possible to determine exactly what has happened to rates of unhealthy behavior, delivery of preventative services, or the prevalence of underlying medical conditions in local neighborhoods during the pandemic. Limited survey data and anecdotal evidence from communities around the nation suggest that some unhealthy behaviors may be increasing, and delivery of non-COVID-related medical services may have slowed. The fact that COVID hit people of color harder in communities across the nation is fairly well established. However, and in our community is no exception. The last report for February from Tom Green County's Health Department estimated that whites account for 36.8% of 16,324 total COVID cases since March of last year. The Census Bureau, in turn, reports that the non-Latino white population comprises 52.4% of the county's more than 119,000 people. The Bureau also estimates that Blacks, Latinos, and other people of color make up 47.6% of the population, while the health department data suggests that they represent 63.2% of COVID cases. The likelihood that the pandemic has aggravated health disparities that historically have snuffed out opportunities for vulnerable people is one reason why the latest creation of Tom Luce's Texas 2036 think tank caught my eye. The Health Coverage Policy Explorer is an online tool that enables any interested citizen to conduct cost and benefit assessments on hundreds of different policy scenarios available to legislators when they address the high rate of medically uninsured Texans during this year's legislative session. Earlier in life, Luce admits to thinking, "My success was because I'm bright and smart and all that good jazz," he continues. "But then I learned I was really body surfing on ocean waves that other people had created." I believe that deep down, most of us know that we need every member of the community to be healthy so they can help create the waves we surf on. That is why we should press our legislators to move toward universal health coverage as a first step toward fixing the horrendous system of health disparities that disproportionately expose the most vulnerable Texans to illness and early death. Contact Kenneth L. Stewart at kenneth.stewart STEWART at angelo.edu. Wild about Texas. Western diamond rattlesnakes, a dangerous but beneficial animal, by Michael Price, special to the San Angelo Standard Times. There are times when I write this column that the information about an animal is scarce and a little difficult to come by. However, at other times, the material that is available is almost overwhelming. There is so much information, true and false, that I would like to present that a column like this would quickly take up more space than is allowed. And such is the case with the Western Diamondback Rattlesnake. The Western Diamondback Rattlesnake occurs from central Oklahoma through the western two-thirds of Texas, westward to the southeastern border of California, south to the state of San Luis Potosi, Mexico. In Texas, it is the most commonly encountered venomous snake in the Trans-Pecos ecoregion, as well as the Tamalpeian thorn scrub of South Texas. It is a habitat generalist, occupying a variety of habitats ranging from the desert scrub near the Permian Basin to high-elevation pine oaks forests of the Davis Mountains. Western diamondbacks are the second-largest venomous snake in the United States, slightly exceeded in size only by the eastern diamondback rattlesnake of Florida and other East Coast states. It is by far the largest venomous snake that occurs in Texas. Adult western diamondbacks can average lengths of up to 7 feet in length, although, just like in humans, the average is much smaller than this. Most individuals max out at a length between 4 and 5 feet in total length. The body coloration of western diamondbacks can vary, depending on the soil type where it occurs, from a chalky gray to a dull reddish brown. Along the spine is a series of darker diamond-shaped markings that are bordered by a black and white border, hence the name Diamondback. A common nickname among those who encounter this serpent frequently is Coontail, which refers to the black and white banded tail. These tail bands are of nearly equal width, one characteristic that is used to determine this animal from the more dangerous Mojave rattlesnake that inhabits the Trans-Pecos area of Texas as well. The head is distinctly wider than the neck, giving this animal the famous diamond-shaped head. The pupils are elliptical, and the rattle is large and capable of being heard from several yards away. Diamondbacks, like other snakes, do not hibernate in the true sense of the word, but rather employ an activity known as brumation. This means that the snake's metabolism, heart rate, and breathing all slow down to a near stop, but they are quite awake and aware of their surroundings. They will often congregate in large numbers in dens to spend the long periods of inactivity of winter, and once temperatures achieve a level of warmth that the snake finds tolerable, usually in early to mid-March, then the males begin leaving the den site in their quest to mate. Females release a pheromone that attracts the males, and many times more than one male will encounter a female that is receptive. During these encounters, the males will participate in a dramatic dance as they entwine their bodies together in a wrestling match style event. The winner is the one who is able to pin the other to the ground, and mating ensues upon the dominant male's victory. Diamondbacks are oviparous, which means they give birth to living young, and the foot-long neonates, which number from 4 to 25, are typically born in late summer and early fall. Other than having a button on the end of their tail, they are exact replicas of the adults and are fully capable of fending for themselves, including having fully functional fangs and venom apparatus. Western diamondbacks defend themselves in a variety of ways, with the main defense mechanism being that of camouflage. Even with the gaudy patterns and colors, this snake blends in well with its primarily brushy habitats. The second defensive plan is that of crawling away from a potential predator while rattling its tail slightly. If this does not deter its assailant, then it will begin to curl up in a defensive S-coiled stance and aggressively vibrate its tail, causing the rattling sound to get louder. This behavior is typically a final stand, so to speak, and many times an encounter with a diamondback does not come to this point. Out of the 300 or so diamondbacks that I encounter each summer, less than 10% resort to this tactic, while most being satisfied to avoid any confrontations. The last defensive mechanism is that of biting and injecting a deadly venom into a would-be attacker. This venom, depending on a huge variety of factors, can be lethal to humans, although few human fatalities actually occur. Despite these venomous propensities, the Western Diamondback is surprisingly beneficial in the fact that it preys primarily on small mammals, such as mice or rats. When participating in outdoor activities, the risk of encountering a Western Diamondback is slim, although it can and does happen occasionally. If such an encounter occurs, remember that this animal, despite its harmful capability, is more afraid of you than you are of it, and it would prefer to be left alone. Most bites from this species occur when people make an attempt to either capture or kill this snake. The best course of action is to walk, don't run, in the opposite direction, making both you and the snake more at ease. Michael Price is owner of Wild About Texas, an educational company that specializes in venomous animal safety training, environmental consultations, and ecotourism. Contact him at wildabouttexas@gmail.com. And now here's our weekly column from Allison Watkins. Herbs are a worthwhile addition to every garden. Published March 10th. Many of the herbs we commonly use in home landscapes are Mediterranean plants, and they did not fare well in the extremely cold weather from the winter storm. But herbs are so useful and beneficial, they are worth replacing if needed. In general, herbs are deer-resistant, good for pollinators like bees and butterflies, delicious for cooking, and beautiful in the landscape. The snow cover most likely saved the root systems and lower canopy of many of the damaged plants, so just wait a bit and see where new growth starts to emerge and cut back to that point. Or take a sharp knife and scrape some stems to look for green living tissue to see what's alive. There are herbs to try for every level of gardening experience, from beginner to advanced. Beginners could try easy-to-grow plants like mint. There are many delicious types to choose from. And expert gardeners up for a challenge could try some of the harder-to-grow types, at least in West Texas, like chamomile and tarragon. There are many herbs to try in the landscape. Some of the recommended types for the Concho Valley include evergreens like sage, winter savory, rosemary, thyme, oregano, lavender, marjoram, and chives. Annuals like basil, parsley, dill, cilantro, and semi-evergreen perennials like mint, catnip, catmint, fennel, lemon, balm, Mexican mint marigold, lemon verbena, and lemongrass. Mexican mint marigold can be used as a substitute for the more challenging to grow tarragon, and calendula, or marigold petals, can be used as a substitute for the extremely pricey saffron spice. Nasturtium flower buds can be used as an alternative to capers. It's fun and rewarding to be able to cook and serve food with ingredients from your own yard. Just be sure to be mindful of herbs and any other plants that will be eaten, and do not use pesticides that would make them harmful to ingest. Use only vegetable garden-safe pest control techniques and utilize integrated pest management, IPM, methods like physical, cultural, and biological controls to keep plants healthy. Most herbs prefer full sun and well-drained soil. Incorporating compost can help loosen up soil and increase drainage. Some do well in poor soil, though, like lavender. It will thrive in rocky, lean soil, so don't add organic matter. Join us for a seminar on spring landscaping in West Texas and recovery from winter damage. We will cover trees, lawns, and edible landscape crops on Thursday, March 18th from 6 to 9 p.m. To register, visit the website tomgreen.agrilife.org. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.